What's going on, everybody? It's Daryl Frater here, the club CEO, and we have another amazing DJ here, DJ Q. Brother, can you introduce yourself? Tell the people where you're from.
How's it going? My name is DJ Q. I'm originally from Silver Spring, Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C. Represent the DMV area, and been DJing for about a decade now. So my career pretty much started in college, but I've always been really into music. I actually really wanted to be a music producer at first. And then when I went to college, I ended up in a role where I had to throw events. I was an event coordinator for our African American Alliance. I went to college down in Tennessee, by the way. Sewanee, the University of the South. Real small, liberal arts, predominantly white school. And that definitely helped shape my early career, as far as like understanding how to play for like corporate clients. You know what I mean? Like all the kids that I was performing for, like they end up being the interns, or they end up, you know, like that's just the world we live in. You know,
Wow. No, that's super amazing. So you started DJing in college, and then that kind of helped you with the relationships that you built, and people, you know, as they moved up in their career, they became decision makers at these corporate companies, and you were able to get in and do DJ work for these people in their events, right?
Yeah, I definitely had a lot of connections from college, and got a lot of gigs, and I ended up doing kind of being the prime DJ for this sort of this group of folks that had money and threw lots of events. So awesome. I was the go-to DJ for that, and yeah, you know, things started off in college, and I was fortunate enough to meet a early mentor. He didn't go to the college I went to, but we were in the same scholarship program. And his name is Jamal, DJ Dopestar. He was also from DC. So we had the same scholarship program, and that's how we connected. And he was kind enough to let me just kind of watch him and learn from him. So eventually I had the courage to try some of the things he would show me. And just would continue on, you know, any questions I had, he would kind of guide me through, you know, my equipment questions, all that stuff. So I was very fortunate to kind of have that early mentor.
Awesome. Now that's really great, man. And I'm super curious, like, what was that spark that made you decide that you wanted to become a DJ? Like, what sparked you to do that?
So for me, it was back in college when I was the event coordinator for our African American Alliance. So most schools have like a BSU, a Black Student Union, but we didn't have that. The closest thing we had was our African American Alliance. And me and my roommate were the event coordinators, so we had to throw the events, the parties and such. And our school was in the middle of nowhere on a mountain in Tennessee. So like we really, if we wanted to pop in DJ, we had to get someone from Atlanta, and that was a 2-hour plus drive. There were some DJs in Nashville or Chattanooga that we could holler at, but you know, if we were about to pay someone, we usually went and got them from Atlanta. So, but they weren't always available, so sometimes I would just play the music. It would just be YouTube tabs open, tons of YouTube tabs. And then it was virtual DJ, and then I with the guidance of DJ Dopestar, I figured out what equipment I needed to use, and then I started to DJ some of our parties. And what was unique about my school was, again, it was a predominantly white school, and all of their parties were frat parties with bands, you know, but folks wanted to still dance, like they wanted to still party, get low, all of that, you know. So my fraternity, we turned into what we called the late night spot, where we would have the after parties, and where you could dance, have a DJ, which was me, and just like really party, because the bands also had to be done by I think like 1 a.m. or something, so it was pretty early. People still wanted to rock. Our house was in the cut. The campus police didn't really bother us because we weren't doing nothing, you know, illegal really. It was just a gathering. It was safe, no trouble. Got shut down a few times, but for the most part, they let us rock till 2-3, and then they would break it up, or you know, then people would have to go.
Yeah, man. No, I'm super familiar with my college days of throwing parties and getting shut down by the cops, so I'm there with you. And I think that your story is super fascinating because you didn't intently decide, oh, I want to be a DJ. You kind of were gradually pushing that direction where the need was there and you were just fulfilling that need. And then it became much more real with each iteration and each improvement that you decided, until he was like, you know what? I'm here. Let me invest my time and energy and really learn the trade of DJing. Then you had your mentor that helped make that process much easier. So like your journey is a lot different from the interviews that I've currently been doing with some of these other DJs. I think it's really dope because like everyone's journey and everyone's story about how they got into DJ is so different. And it shows just the uniqueness that becoming a DJ, that anyone can become one. You just kind of have to find your way into the industry and figure out a way for you to thrive and be able to do what you love. So that's super exciting, man. And are you still in touch with your mentor? Do you guys still, is he still your mentor?
Yeah. So my mentor, we actually ended up living together for a few years after college. It was really dope. That was an incredible creative period because not only was it two DJs living together, but we also, the universe brought three other really dope DJs kind of into our circle. So it was kind of like they would always be over at the crib, and it was just dope. We were just learning all the time from each other, you know. And it was bachelor pad too, so like it was, you know, good vibes. It was basically almost like an extension of college.
Dope, man. That's exciting. And then we could do it with people that you have a good time with, that it's fun, that you guys vibe very well. It just becomes a great experience where you're doing what you love, making some money, and then you're just with people that make the experience complete. And that's super awesome, man. That's exciting.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so from that experience, like where did you guys go and how did your DJ career progress from, you know, living with your mentor and being able to, you know, have that crew that you were rocking with on the regular?
So things just kept building. We were kind of like the new kids in DC, in the DC scene. So we had to earn our stripes, but we were definitely, you know, we were doing it. You know, we were carrying our turntables on the metro bus, on the train, like two techniques in hand, you know, like did what we had to do. It definitely was gritty, you know, but it was great. I started working for a couple of entertainment companies, so I got to learn the private event side of things while also DJing the clubs and stuff. So it was a well-rounded early start. And then I'm always working. So while I was DJing, I usually had two or three jobs. As the DJing increased, as my clientele increased, I scaled back on the jobs. And then eventually it was just me DJing and working part-time at a restaurant as a waiter. And then I got an opportunity to DJ on a cruise ship. So that was really, really cool. My job was really dope. You know, they really rocked with me and they allowed me to take the 6 weeks off to do this cruise job, you know? My first cruise contract was in the Caribbean. They flew me down to Florida and I went to all over the Caribbean. It was just dope. I don't even remember.
Yeah, no. I've heard stories about DJs on cruise ships, and they say that it's a really dope experience, pays well, and it's just an awesome, fun time doing it. So it's like a win-win in regards to having fun and making money and doing something you love. So I'm glad that you had a great experience and were able to see the islands. And tell me a little bit more, like, you know, what was the highlight of that experience working on the cruise ship?
For sure, no doubt. I'll dive into that. So, but I will say though, cruise ships, most companies, most cruise lines don't pay that much, to be honest. I turned down my first offer because it was too low and too long of a contract. It was like 6 months and I was making like half of what I would on land, you know. Then my second contract, I didn't turn down, but well, my first contract got turned down. Second contract, I was about to take. The third contract gave me more money. So that's the one I ended up taking. And I earned my, you know, my pay raises and things like that with good appraisals and such. But it's still a dope experience regardless, because you're not paying for, you know, your living expenses. You're not paying for food. All of that is provided to you. Really, the only things you pay for is if, like, you're getting off on the islands and you're buying, you know, whatever it is, an experience, a beer, food, whatever it might be. Souvenirs, like, it's what you decide to spend, so you can save money, which is dope. Now to the fun stuff, like, it's an incredible experience to wake up every day in a different place, a different country, and also to learn about the cultures and the music from each place. Like, it's really shaped my playing style, because I like to cross genres and barriers, and it gives me the tools to do that, like, to connect dots from all the way around the world. So, you know, whether it's soca, roots reggae, or merengue, salsa, cumbia, baile funk, like, whatever it might be, you know, I can connect dots and make people feel at home wherever they might be in the world, which is kind of cool.
That's awesome, brother. Yeah, I think it's so cool that DJs can play so many different roles. And, you know, most people just think of a DJ as a club DJ, but there's so many other avenues to take your DJ career. You could do the club scene, you can do weddings, you can do cruise ships, you can do corporate events. It's like so many options. It's not a one track minded business. It's something that you actually could go so many different places and succeed. Would you recommend other people that are thinking about, you know, DJing or a cruise ship, would you recommend that to other people? Or is like, you know, something I don't really want to do again? Like, what's your feel? Do you recommend it to other people?
I think it's an incredible experience. So right now I have to say, you know, definitely maybe not, because of like COVID and everything. You get, realistically, you know, you have to wait till that's all sorted out. The cruise companies, they're all about the like, they're trying to come back. Like, real talk, I just got this in the mail from the company I work for. They're like trying to sell people cruises for this fall. I'm like, yo, chill. But, you know, I get it. They have to operate, and they have people that they, like, thousands of people that they employ from around the world. However, I'd be a hypocrite if I was to say, like, that experience wasn't absolutely life-changing, because I learned so much as a DJ and as a person. I was able to learn, like, yo, I found out things such as, like, hip hop is huge in Eastern Europe. I had friends from Siberia, and they're like, yo, I really rock to this, or, you know, from all places, Ukraine, all of these places, like Bulgaria, they're all just like, yo, we love this hip hop because we can relate to it. I'm like, really? They're like, yeah, we grew up in the ghetto. Like, it's the slums where we grow up. And I'm like, dang, you know what I'm saying? Like, I get it now. It's not just like you're fanboying. It's like, this music speaks to you. You know, there's struggle, there's universal struggle, and that's where hip hop came from. It was the voice of struggle, and like to know that it connects all the way around the world, that is beautiful. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's empowering. And then like, just to learn things such as, you know, I'm not gonna lie, on one of my, you know, my last contract, we did a tour of South America. And I went into that tour thinking like, I'm about to rock this jump, because I know my Central American and Caribbean Latin music, like hands down, you know what I'm saying? I got it. So I went in there thinking I can play that for my South Americans. I was wrong. You know, like Celia Cruz does not hit the same in South America as she does in Central America and the Caribbean. You know, like I had to learn their type of Latin music, their type of cumbia, their type of merengue. And that was a humbling experience, you know?
Talk to me about that. How do you go about, you know, reading the room and being able to select and cater into the crowd when you don't know who they are? What's some tips or some ways that you go about doing that so you can, you know, engage with your audience?
That's a great question. So on the cruise ships, specifically, you'll have folks from all over the world, and you'll have them usually for a certain amount of days. So it might be 3 days, it might be 10 days, it might be 20 days, you know? And the first nights are all kind of experimental. So it's pretty much fishing. I'm playing different genres and seeing how they react and, you know, reading their body movements. And then I sort of take either mental note or I'll even write it down. You know, I'll write it down on a notepad, like, this does not work. You know, like, stay away from Pitbull or whatever. Like, they are not rocking to whatever it might be. So when, in a way, it's kind of fortunate you get so many days with them because you can kind of feel it out. Then once you get an idea of what is working, you know, what's warm, then you kind of stay in that lane, or you'll ask, like, I'm not afraid to ask some of the folks that are there, you know, where they're from, and then two, what kind of music do they like? You know what I'm saying? One thing, so on the cruise ships, like, the night progresses very slowly. So usually, because there's so much going on, so much entertainment earlier. So if I start the nightclub at 10, there's still shows going on till 11, 12 sometimes. So there'll be some people hanging out early for happy hour or whatnot. And I'll go around and just chat with them, you know, be like, hey, where are you from? You know, what type of music gets you up on the dance floor? Like, I know you're chilling right now, but you know, so it's kind of one, of course, fishing, and then two, just being able to get to know who your audience is.
That's awesome, man. And I think that also helps when, you know, you're on the set and there are people that in the audience actually know you. That kind of motivates them to start dancing and interacting with other people. And then that kind of gets the whole vibe of the party going. And then that enhances your ability to read the room and see what works and what doesn't work and make it a true party. So like, DJ's job starts way before they're actually on the DJ set in the party. You know, if you're able to build relationships and network and talk to your people, do your research with the crowd that you're going to be dealing with beforehand, you're kind of a step ahead of the game. So you're super smart, man, and that's a hack, that's a skill, that's a nugget that DJs should be able to hold on to and use during their next event or party. So that's super awesome, brother.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, man. So what are your predictions about the future of the DJ industry right now? You know, we're in 2021 and COVID is in full force, and it's really had a big change in this industry. What do you think is going to happen, you know, for the rest of the year and following?
I think that, so right now, there is a virtual movement, a virtual entertainment movement that has been progressing since, you know, the pandemic hit, more or less. And I think that that's going to always remain. I think there'll be a hybrid of some sort. But to be honest, we'll probably be, I mean, in the States, we got hit real hard. So realistically, we probably won't have anything but virtual events for probably most of the year. Now, I do think that, again, there's going to be hybrid events that will come about. I know one, like, for example, in D.C., there are, in D.C. and in, actually, the whole DMV right now, there are reopening places that have indoor dining, you know, so, but they can't have live entertainment, you know, so you still can't DJ. But you are able to like share a live stream or something, you know what I mean? So one thing I was doing was DJing to, and you can, anyone can really do this and should, if they have places that are open, that are like a sports lounge, sports bar, that have all the TVs there, you can simply just have the establishment still pay you to DJ. But you live stream to their TVs, you know what I mean? And you can interact, you know, tell the crowd to download whatever app that you're using. And, you know, you can still do your birthday shout outs and all of that. So that's an example of an hybrid event. And I think that's going to be something that carries on because, yo, there's going to be DJs. There's going to be situations where there's going to be a venue in Australia that is, you know, that's a 30-hour trip from the U.S., you know what I mean? Like, minimum. So, but they're going to want some of the biggest artists. And if a venue can book a personal live stream session, you know, directly to their venue and save a whole bunch of travel costs and that travel cost, maybe now that can actually go to the performer. You know what I mean? Like, things like that are just going to be more practical. And honestly, like, when you go to an in-person event, when you go to an event where, like, Drake's performing, how close are you really going to get to Drake? You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to be looking at a screen of Drake, typically. Unless you're VIP or in the front, you know. So it's just going to be practical to do these hybrid styles of events. And then also on the flip end, when you can have events like concerts and festivals, it only makes sense, again, to sell tickets on the back end to those that want to tune in but may not want to be there in person or may or just aren't able to physically be there, you know? So it's just, I see a future of hybrid virtual events. And then I also see the future being in VR, in actual virtual reality / AR. There already are DJ apps in that you can like put on a VR headset and you can DJ with like the whole Pioneer Club kit, or you can it's pretty dope, like everything works, you know, every knob, every fader, everything is something you can use, and people are gonna want to be able to just toss on a headset and just party, you know. And I'm not sure, like, excuse me, I'm not sure if you follow the news, but Apple just announced that they're going to create a VR headset. And VR headsets are not new. They've been out. But once Apple makes something, then it becomes a household name. So they said that's going to be released in 2022. I would assume like it's going to be too expensive at first, but you know, give it 2-3 years and VR headsets are going to be a household item. And then yeah, you're going to have events, virtual events. They already have virtual concerts. You can go to a NBA game, sit courtside with your headset on. Like, so that's the future.
Hey man, I'm banking on the same future that you've predicted. And that's why I started the club. And I really think that if people are building technology that's able to help help us transition into these online and hybrid worlds, I think there's definitely going to be opportunity to help a lot of people make money and do it in a safer, more scalable way. So I'm super excited about it. I can tell by the way you're speaking about it, you're super excited too. So whatever ways that we can tap in and support one another in this journey of moving towards this, I would love to be there to support you and all other DJs out there that are thinking about live streaming and being a virtual DJ, because there's a lot of opportunity into it. So we're going to jump right into our lightning round. Are you ready?
Oh yeah, let's go.
Awesome. Describe your setup, hardware and software.
All right, so I am a Rain mixer guy. I love the sound of the good old Rain mixes. So right now I'm using a Rain 72 and two Techniques MK2s, 1200s. And yeah, that's it. Simple, simple, sweet.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite DJ?
My favorite DJ, you know, I hate to be cliche, but good old Jazzy Jeff the Magnificent has always been like my favorite.
What has been your favorite party or event that you've DJed at?
Favorite event I've DJed at was in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I DJed with one of my homies, Jax Bonds. He is originally from the Congo, but he's in Buenos Aires, crushing it out there. And I did a funk set, like an American funk set in Buenos Aires. And that was incredible because like, I know many of them didn't even understand what some of these songs were, but I was playing songs that I grew up on and they were rocking. And that was, you know, incredible to see how music is just the universal language.
What's one thing that you hate about live streaming as a DJ?
All the extra technology behind it, like having to manage like these extra monitors and chats and like changing your overlays and scenes while DJing and whew. Take it for granted now.
Shout out DJs you know personally that need to share their story on this podcast.
Dope. Definitely my mentor, my first mentor, DJ Dope Star. Bo knows, DJ Bo is another one of my mentors. Crazy, crazy dope DJ. Incredible story. And then also my fam, DJ K Meta, Kareem the DJ, out of New York, but DC transplant, and of course my brother's Father Fonz and Pedro Knight of a double DMV.
Awesome, brother. And where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
So I'm DJQ DMV across the board. Online, I'm typically on, I do shows on Twitch 6 days a week, and that is Tuesday through Sunday. All right, so you can find me. I do a lunchtime show on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's called Q's Cafe. Serve up international flavors, global sounds, and then Wednesdays in the morning, 9 a.m. Eastern time, I do what's called The Wave, and that's real chill vibes. Think sort of like Selection, if you're familiar with Selection. Yeah, right now I'm just live streaming. I'm keeping it safe inside, and tune in. It's a great time, good energy, good vibes.
Awesome, brother. Well, we're glad to have you on the My DJ Story podcast. You just heard DJ Q. He's rocking it. Go check him out. Thank you, brother.
Appreciate it. Looking forward to DJing on the club too real soon. And thank you for the opportunity, and looking forward to connecting and building with you as well.
Are you a DJ? Well, we want to hire you as one of our official The Club virtual DJs. We've been working hard to source hundreds of paid virtual gigs, and we need DJs of all kinds that are interested in getting paid to curate virtual events for our clients. Whether you're a new DJ just getting started or a veteran in the game, we have paid gig opportunities for you. Text I'm in to 609-201-1027 to get notified for paid gig opportunities from The Club. Tell a friend. We look forward to working with you. Now back to the podcast.